You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Adora Udoji.
Good morning, everyone. Governments around the world are scrambling to come up with more ways to stem the continuing fallout over the credit crisis. The British government said this morning it is injecting $63 billion, a first installment, into banks in a bid to stave off their collapse. And a new Eurozone plan guarantees loans between banks and provides government capital to protect ailing financial institutions in return for taking an ownership stake in them. The ugly week that was is behind us, at least as far as the markets are concerned. But what is ahead as Europe and the UK proceed with plans to actually take control of the worldwide banking system? With the US expected to follow suit, this is a defining moment not only for this crisis, but also for the entire capitalist system itself. Joining us now is New York Times correspondent Mark Landler. He's in Washington, D.C. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Good morning.
So, I mean, is it too much to say this is a defining moment for global capitalism?
I don't think so. I think what you saw over the weekend was the first concerted global effort by governments to step in and try to put a stop to a situation that last week was totally out of control. And if you look at the early Asian stock trading and the stock futures in the U.S., the verdict is, at least so far, a good one. Investors feel that the policymakers are finally getting a grip on the problems. And while that doesn't say that there won't be very difficult times ahead, it at least suggests that what we had last week, which was that almost sickening feeling of no control, might be replaced by something a little more reassuring this week.
Well, reassurance is really the coin of the realm at this point. Neil Kashkari, an assistant Treasury secretary who's running the TARP program, that's the U.S. Troubled Asset Recovery Program out of the U.S. Treasury on an interim basis, he's delivering a speech right now, and it's being carried live on a number of networks, probably the first time in history that an assistant Treasury secretary received that kind of attention. Mark, explain to me the difference between regulation by a government over a bank if it's just a regulator and regulation by a government over a bank if it's also part owner of that bank?
Well, it's sort of relatively simple. A regulator has the right to tell a bank that it has to keep a certain ratio of capital on its books. They call it a capital adequacy ratio and certain other very other basic things. They insure deposits. But if the government becomes a part owner, it can actually have a role in having control over the decisions the bank makes, the risks it takes, the management, the board, the dividend it pays, if any. So there are a wide range of things that the government, as a 40%, 50%, or 60% stakeholder in a bank, would control over the bank's affairs. Importantly, I should add, it will have very tight control over how the top executives are compensated, whether they get a golden parachute if they leave, whether they have to give back some of their compensation if the bank's condition later deteriorates. So there are a wide range of things that a government would do that it doesn't normally do.
And indeed, in the UK, as the British Treasury was injecting the $63 billion into three banks, at least one head of a bank was given the heave-ho.
So, absolutely, and that'll probably happen across the board in any bank recapitalizations. It's very hard politically to justify spending taxpayer money and leaving in the same guys who presumably had a role in getting the bank to that position.
Well, that raises the question, how come it is the case that leaders around the world are blaming U.S. financial mismanagement for causing this crisis, yet the only place where people appear to have any confidence in parking their money is U.S. Treasury bills? As the scale of the debacle becomes clear, the confidence in the U.S. government being able to manage this gets greater. I don't really understand that.
That's one of the great paradoxes of this whole situation. And it speaks to something interesting, which is that no matter how chaotic the U.S. situation looks and how difficult the situation is, the question is, what's the better bet? If you're not going to put your money in the U.S., what are your other alternatives? You can buy gold, of course, or you can put it in your mattress. But you're not necessarily going to put it into the Asian economies because you're not certain how the Asian economies are going to weather this period. And there's already a bad track record of financial instability in Asia. Until this morning, you probably wouldn't have put it anywhere near Europe. Europe. The Europeans have finally got their act together over the weekend, but last week the situation looked even more unsettled there. So it's not that it's necessarily an enormous vote of confidence in the U.S., but relative to any other option, the U.S. government still looks like a fairly good risk.
And the Dow Industrial Average futures are up something on the order of 370 points this morning. Is this just more volatility, an upward blip, or should we pay attention to this market open at 9:30?
Well, I'm not going to prognosticate about the market, and even my colleagues in New York who know much more about markets than I do make a point of saying you can't necessarily draw definitive conclusions from futures trading. There have been days where the futures have been trading up, and after a strong open, investors run out of steam in the middle of the session and the stocks turn down again. I mean, certainly it's better than if futures were trading down, and it does suggest that all the concerted action over the weekend seems to have had a psychological effect. The question is, as investors begin to focus on the cost of everything that was announced over the weekend and this morning, will they run out of enthusiasm? Because
one of the
grim realities is this is going to be very expensive.
Well, Mark Lando, New York Times correspondent, thanks for joining us.
Thank you.
That on a day when Paul Krugman wins the Nobel Prize for Economics.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.